and gentlemen. I'm just throwing us into record mode. I am running solo today, everyone. It is Tuesday, October 11th, and it is a very powerful day. It is it Girls' Day? What is the name of it? Let me have a look at this. Hold on. Let me have a peek here. Let me have a look. I see you all there. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's so strange to be doing this call without Yvette Murray. She's on a wonderful vacation right now. She's gone to Rome and to Malta. And so, Yvette, if you listen to this, we miss you and we love you and we hope you're having a fabulous time. I do. It's just a small group today, so this is pretty interesting. I see Christina there. I'm so excited you're on the line today, Christina, because I know I had said to you, call in on Tuesday and we're going to do some coaching around this struggle that you've been going through. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. I do want to let you all know that I did something incredibly brave today. It was actually quite shocking. I didn't expect to do it, but ever since the scandal came out on the weekend with the lewd sort of, I'd call it a sex tape of Donald Trump, I've been so upset and so quietly upset and so trying to, you know, here in Canada, it was our Thanksgiving and I, you know, was with my family and on Saturday I had my sister and her children and husband and they came and spent the day and we had a beautiful bonfire fire going on outside. But even at that point, I didn't talk about any of it. I didn't say anything to anybody over the entire weekend. I was just very quiet about it. I was really present with my family, really trying to, you know, just take in what is going on here. And I had made a decision. I don't want to talk about this election publicly. I was seeing how it was creating such a divide. I was having, you know, people who were my students or, you know, even staff who were, you know, sort of having a different opinion that I was having. And I just thought, you know what, it's just not worth it. This is politics. We've all been taught from the time we were little girls, little boys, don't talk about religion, don't talk about politics, don't talk about, well, I was actually told to not talk about a lot of things. The truth is, growing up, I was told to, what goes on in our house stays in our house. You know, adults are to be respected, children are to be seen and not heard. And so I was told to not talk about a lot of things. And it's actually something called learned helplessness. We're taught that our voice doesn't matter. We should be quiet. We should do the best we can with what's been given to us. And we should suck it up, buttercup. And, you know, not be those kind of women. Don't be one of those kind of women. Don't be one of those kind of women who, you know, has a big mouth, who laughs too loud, talks too much, you know, puts her opinion in where she's not asked for it. Just be nice. Be lovely. So for most of my life, I tried it. As you can see, I have a really hard time doing it. So anyways, after this weekend and my sister was here and the kids and my children and, you know, watching it all, and then Sunday came and my kids went off to their boyfriend's houses. And so I was alone in the house with Aaron and I was quiet and I was just still really trying to process that whole, what was going on here with this election and with these accusations and with the... And then, of course, I couldn't help it. I know I was only going to watch the baseball game. The Blue Jays won a just a wipeout. They did three wins against Texas. And for those of you from Texas, I just love my Blue Jays. Nothing personal. That's how politics used to be. You know, here's what's really interesting. I sat on the plane once beside the Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister of Canada's speechwriter. And he was a young guy. He'd actually be pretty shocked. And he was from Britain. He was a conservative. I wasn't thinking, oh, conservatives and liberals or Democrats and Republicans. He was fabulous. I was with my husband. I sat in the middle. He sat beside me. We drank wine and talked politics and life and genders and relationships. We had the most incredible conversation and we became friends afterwards. And he said to me at the time, you know, you should get into politics. And I said, oh, no, that's not my cup of tea. I have other things. He said, but you know, all the great changes that have ever happened. He talked about Abraham Lincoln and he talked about great politicians. And he said, you really have to understand that most of them are actually friends. Like they really are off stage. It's a battle of the minds. It's instead of being like sports, the way, you know, athletes get into a field and the Blue Jays can fight against Texas, but they're not really fighting. They're athletes and half of them are probably Blue Jays. There's only two Blue Jays that are even Canadian. The rest are from the States and from Dominican and from all kinds of other places, Mexico, all kinds of other places. So sports are just this way that we can sort of say we battle, but there's no battling. And politics used to be that way. You know, I was talking with Samuel Coates, and Samuel said, they're pretty witty and bitey, and some of the stuff that goes on sometimes in those, you know, the Congress and some of the passing laws, and you know, sometimes they'll actually meet at a party afterwards and have a glass of wine. They're not enemies like you think they are. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? It's just sort of this whole different arena of battling with brains and wit and conversation. And but boy, this one's really turned into something different, hasn't it? It's really become such a spectacle. It's like we're in the gladiator's ring, and all the stops are pulled, and people are just getting down and dirty, and it's crazy, as you know. And so this one really, this has affected me, and it's affecting me. Some people, you know, it's interesting because I teach, for those of you who are doing the Emotional Edge Telecourse with me, for those of you who have done my work in the past, you know that I often teach that when we're triggered, it's because that trigger is happening because something that other person has doing or has done is bringing up a wound inside of us that hasn't been healed. And so part of the work that I did, for those of you that are doing it with me last week, week five, was a really powerful 10-step process. It was sort of like, who's triggering me and what actions are triggering me, and when was I taught when I was young that those kind of actions are unacceptable? And did you ever act that way and you were shamed for it? And how did you make a decision to overcompensate, to never be like that? And can you see now that people are showing up in your life to trigger an old wound that needs healing? You know, Ian Levinzat says in her book, In the Meantime, and I'm going by just memory right now, she says, you know, what we love about other people are what we love in ourselves, and what we despise in other people are what we can't see about ourselves. So one might say, what I despise in Donald Trump is that I can't see that I'm also a predator, or I can't see. But I'm going to take that further, because triggers also trigger a wound. And what that triggered for me this weekend was the fact that I had been sexually abused, and it had just been dismissed, and not just by men. My own mother, when I was 18 years old and I was crying and I was finally talking about it, and she was drunk, laying in the back seat of the car. My brother and I had gone to try to get her out of this bar, and she was drunk and wanted to leave with a bunch. It was just a gong show, and I can't believe I'm admitting this, but I couldn't get my mother in the car, and she was drunk and wanted to leave with a group of Mexican men down in Florida, and it's not because they're Mexican men. She was leaving with a group of Mexican men that barely spoke English, and she wouldn't get in the car and come with us. And so I'm so ashamed to admit it, but I actually think I punched my mom and threw in the back seat of the car, and I was crying, and I was saying to my brother, this is what I've been dealing with for so long, this is what, and I, you know, we started talking, and I said, Jeff, I've been through so much, and you know, I was raped and I started talking, and I started crying, and my mother piped up from the back seat, because my mother had been raped when she was 14. My mother had been raped by two men when she was 14 years old. She'd been walking home one night, and they had said, you know, you shouldn't be out here late at night walking. You know, we'll drive you home. We have daughters your same age. And they picked her up, and instead of turning right to go down towards their house, they turned left, left the city, and, you know, basically I would call that an abduction. They took her out of the car. They raped her and left her on the ground and pulled away and left her there. And she walked all the way to her boyfriend's house, and it was her boyfriend's father that took her to the police station. I don't know why she didn't go home. I do know why we don't go home. We don't go home because we're so ashamed to tell our parents, who have taught us that we need to be virgins and that have taken us to church and have drilled into our ears that we need to be virgins until we get married because you'll be tarnished goods. So we're so ashamed. So I was crying, telling my brother finally what happened, and my mother literally piped up into the back seat and said, oh, stop being so dramatic. Mine was worse than yours. And that was the end. And what I learned in that moment is that women will even turn against other women. Women will justify when something is abusive. Women don't even understand the rape culture that we've all been raised in. Many women who even that are justifying Trump right now, they'll say things like, well, Hillary Clinton's husband, we're talking about Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, I guarantee, will not be raping anybody in the White House. I guarantee when Hillary Clinton gets into the White House, she will not be doing whatever Bill did, whatever Trump has done. And that wasn't the point of my blog. My point of my blog was that we are living still in a world where, you know, I finally saw something on, I forget what day it was, I think it was Monday, maybe it was yesterday, the day before, in the morning after I'd seen the debate, and I was just so sleepless night, felt sick about it, thought about all the things that had happened to me, and I only just posted 4 of my sexual abuses in that blog. I've had so many inappropriate, absolutely disgusting experiences with different men over the course of my life that I started to question, what the hell was I doing? What was I giving off? Why? It made perfect sense to me that by the time I had children, I gained 100 pounds because it was my protection. And then I really had to learn how to become empowered in order to lose the weight. I had to learn how to really know how to trust myself and protect myself. And still things would happen that I wouldn't speak out about. So the reason I wrote that blog was to say, we're living in a rape culture, and that's in the United States of America and even here in Canada because I'm Canadian. And this happened to me in Canada. I'm not saying American men. These were Canadian men that did this to me that I decided to write about. And so my point of that blog was that if we think that tape of 59-year-old Donald Trump that was, what, 10, 11 years ago, if we think that tape doesn't represent who he is, and that he doesn't represent an archetype, the underbelly of America, the underbelly of all of the people who believe on some sick level that that's okay. I'm not even talking about who's the best president and what has Hillary Clinton done wrong and did Hillary Clinton, her husband, do bad things to people. And that was not the point of the blog. Her name didn't come up into my blog. The point of that blog was to say, we can't be silent any longer, and we can't bash other women who are speaking out about abuses. I don't care who they are. And we can't on any level think that it's okay on any level to exploit or to see another human being as an object, whether it's the way we are treating people in third world countries, they're in disgusting sweatshops that we wouldn't allow our dogs to go into and live inside, and they're working in those all day long. My point of that blog is that there is oppression in the world, and if we are silent, we are doing nothing. If we can't speak up and start to tell our stories, we are agreeing with abusers, and we are agreeing with the people who say, it's just locker room talk, or it's not that big a deal, or the United States has a lot bigger challenges to face than if their president has groped some women. That was the point of that blog. And as a woman who is empowering other women, as a woman who has dedicated my life to helping women heal from the abuses and the wounds and the learned helplessness that is so permeating our society. If I don't speak out right now on what just happened this weekend, I think I would be even more ashamed of myself than being silent. The shame that I felt over the years of not speaking up for myself, not telling my story, not when that lawyer, literally after I was $75,000 into my child custody support that a lot of you have heard about, and I've said it was hell and I wouldn't. Here's the truth. The lawyer was more hell than fighting my ex-husband. That lawyer did more damage to me in many respects than my ex-husband having to fight him to get him to pay child support for my own children. To have a lawyer when you're $75,000 in and he knows you're in, you can't get out of this thing now. You've given him all your money. To tell you that he could go easy on the rest of your billing if you gave him a hand job. He said, if you could give me a hand. I didn't understand. What do you mean, give me a what? If you could give me a hand. And he unzipped his pants. I left in shock. I called the Upper Law Society of Canada and said, what do I do? They said, you can change lawyers, you can file a complaint about him, it will go on his record if anyone looks into it, but there's really nothing else you can do. There's nothing else you can do by the legal system. It's time that we women speak up and speak out. And that's the point of this. And so I'm calling you right now. There are only 15 people on this conversation, 15 people. You're private. You're in a vault. And If we use your first name, that's only your first name. And I'm asking each one of you to have the courage that when you're in your own life and you've had an injustice, to have the courage to speak about it. Because the only way that fear will really win, and if you want to think of fear as evil, if you want to think of however you want to think about it, this is what fear does to us. It tells us that we can't speak out, that we'll be more shamed, that we'll be attacked, that people will think we're liars, that our integrity or our reputation would be tarnished, that we'll be questioned. I didn't want to tell people. You know, I thought to myself, how can somebody have this many bad things? The truth is, I didn't even talk about my mom's 24-year-old boyfriend that moved in when I was 12. And no, he didn't rape me, but he sexually abused me until I was 15 and finally moved out into his cousin's house. I know this is all rambling. My point is, there are so many stories that we are keeping hidden. For what reason? We are so afraid we'll be ostracized from our tribe. We're so afraid that we're just so afraid. And that's how fear works in society. Fear hopes you'll stay silent. The machine, that oppression, racism and chauvinism and sexism and all of that exploitation that is happening, that trickles down from men, and this is not anti-man, but it is, they will oppress other men. They have people in sweatshops. This is all at the top, and it is men that are running the world still. And if we women don't come together and start supporting each other and start saying, regardless of all the rest, that tape was disgusting, and that tape, is that who you want? We're not talking about Hillary Clinton. Do you want that man to represent your country in the world? So I went out on a limb today, Tuesday, October 11th. It's Girls' Day, International Girls' Day. Didn't even realize it until I decided, but boy, I was sort of numb all day yesterday. I was so sad. I was so broken feeling, and I had no idea what to do with my feelings and my emotions. And I wrote a beautiful post about how I was going to pray for a greater understanding of humanity and a better ability to grasp the human language so that I could reach more people, so that my post wouldn't divide us, so that I know I wrote all that because that is my intentions and my prayers. And yet I couldn't sleep all night. And I tossed and turned and tossed and turned and woke up this morning early and my fingers just started to write. And I think I wrote that blog in about 10 minutes. Boom, 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 just came through. And I thought, this is huge courage. I can't believe I'm going to write this. I can't believe I'm going to put this out here. But I have to. If it only helps one woman, then I have to. And if it only shows one man that that locker talk is not acceptable on any level, and to every woman that's not acceptable on any level, then I'm glad I did it. I'm really glad I did it. And this is what life is, right? Life doesn't mean we're always going to be, you know, I hear people write things like, well, you don't want to give power to it, and you should never talk about, it just reminds me of my childhood. Some of my own SWAT sisters have written things like that, saying things like, you should, you know, just never talk about it, and love is the only thing that's real, and love is the, and in the end, and I go, yeah, I know, I got all that, I get it. Just a few days ago, I was on a live Facebook group in our emotional lives, and I was like, in India, there's a saying, in the end, it will all be okay, and if it's not okay, it's not the end. And suddenly I said to myself, what the hell does that mean? In the end of what? In the end of the world? In the end of times? At the end of your life? In the end, it'll all be okay? I'm not willing to wait to the end for it to be okay. It's time for us to take a stand and to talk about the things that are not okay. And we don't have to do it in a way that is uneducated, unreasonable, unintelligent. We don't have to do it in a way that is, but women are being called right now like never before. The Dalai Lama came to Canada, of all places, in 2009 at the Vancouver Peace Summit, and he said, the Western woman will heal the world. And when I heard him say that, I believed him. Because I knew we would be called, we're being called to stand in the face of this man's world and to use our voice and to tell our stories and to talk about what it feels like And maybe it will even liberate and free those men who have been abused. Because do you know how many men have been sexually abused by other men? I mean, I know there's the odd situation where a woman is an abuser. And we need to talk about that too. This is not about against men. But by and large, there are so many of us who have been abused on some level by the people who came before us and by authority figures, by wherever it might be. And if we stay silent, the Dalai Lama is asking us to speak out. Because when you can write about it, that's how you fight it. You don't have to use your fists the way men have done for millions of years. We don't have to go to war and kill people and shoot people and stab people. We can begin to write about it. We can legislate about it. We can talk about it. We can support each other. We can call people accountable. We can use names. We can tell the names of our abusers. If I look back and, you know, I hear a lot of people now talk about it and they'll say, oh, the kids today, you know, they always got their faces in their phones and they're always on social media and they're always recording and they're never in the moment and everything is a video. And inside I think to myself, you know, if back then we had videos, if we had telephones, man, maybe our abusers would know we're going live. We're going with it. We're going to start. And that's what's happening now. We are finally in a position that we can videotape it, talk about it, share it, and that is the only way that we are going to make changes in this world. We cannot be silent any longer. And ladies, I'm asking you and calling you to stand up and to join me in being the face of the women's movement, the next era of the women's movement. We are nowhere near where we need to be. We are not equal. We are not equal. There are still millions and millions of women in the world who cannot leave their home without a male chaperone covered from head to toe with a slit over their eyes. And there are women still in the world who cannot drive a vehicle. They have to be driven somewhere by a man. What would you do right now, you single women? What would you do right now if you had no father or husband or older son that could take you out of the house for you to go get your prescription, for you to go get milk? What would you do right now if you didn't have a husband or a father who would give you permission to be able to go to a school, who could give you permission? What if you didn't have it? Where would you get your groceries from? Do you understand the dire situation that we're in this world? One in five women, Barack Obama came on the Emmys, or was it the Grammys, in 2015. And in front of the entire world, he said one in five women have been sexually abused. One in three women will be physically abused by their own partner in the United States of America. And then we went on and watched the Grammys. Men are not going to take this and run with it. Even the great, great men, they cannot be our voices. They cannot be our voices. And women are being called right now to heal the world. And the way to heal the world is to heal yourself. And once you heal yourself, you will have a greater understanding, a greater level of those triggers will be less and less. It will allow you to speak eloquently, to allow you to tell your story without throwing up or crying, will allow you to be a voice for other women. It will allow you to share your story in a way that is empowering and not as a victim. It will allow you to stand as an empowered woman and not as a victim any longer. This is what it will do. It will give you a sense of confidence, and it will give you a sense of noble dignity when you decide that you matter and being a woman matters. And telling your stories matter, and that's the only way we're going to make changes. And so I'm really calling on you women right now to be the voice that the rest of us women need. And I know that's why you're on the call right now. And it doesn't mean you got your whole shit together. It doesn't mean you got your whole life together, but you realize you're being called. And so I would really ask you to share what we're doing with the SWOT Institute with every woman you know. I'm asking you to stand with me and to help me to get this message out to the world in a big, bold way. I know the lives that I've touched. I know the love that I've given. I know the support that I give on a daily basis to the women in my tribe. And I need more of you. I'll burn out. I can't do it all by myself. I can't run the school on a small number of students with the high costs that we have. I don't take a paycheck. because I'm so invested, and that has to change so that I can keep doing the work that I do. I see Jazz on the line right now, and Jazz says, maybe even playing it small. I'm so one-on-one with people, I don't make any money. We need to get this out to the world. We need to be empowering millions of women, all of us, all of us. It needs to be so much bigger than just me. It can't be one voice standing here hoping that everyone can get in around me and become their own voice too. So I'm really calling on you to really step up and help me. I really am. With that being said, here I am again. And I say it this way because I want you to see what I do. Because here I am again on a day that I am incredibly emotional. I'm sure you can feel it. And I'm here to support you and coach you because we are women empowering each other and we need each other. So I know that, Christina, I know that you've gone through a really rough time in your own life. I know that your family has come back after 30 or 40 years to find you. And I would love to be able to do some support and some coaching with you today. I know it's a heavy day, and I'm glad that I asked you to get on the line, and you did today. So you're live right now, and I would love to help you through what you're going through.
Hi, Crystal.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Thank you for all your comments about the incident with Trump, by the way. Mirrors everything I pretty much thought and felt. And I even had my own experience arguing with people on Facebook. And ironically, there's other women arguing against you.
You know what I want to say? I almost want to say to some of the women, I actually want to say to them, have you ever been raped? I actually just want to ask them, have you ever been dragged behind a bush and raped? Have you ever had a man who's your boss just push you against a wall as you're walking down a stairwell, push you against a wall, thrust his hand up your skirt and tell you that he wants to fuck your C-U-N-T? Like, I can't even say the word. Have you ever had that? When someone starts to defend it, I actually want to say, you don't understand what terror is. You don't have a fucking clue. And the fact that you defend that just shows me how fucking numb you are, how desensitized you are, so fucking desensitized by your own culture. So it's shocking to me. And it's a sad moment. It's a sad moment to me. There's nothing about this that can be like, okay, so let's just talk about the love. Because we have to talk about things, you know? So I know you're going through something, and it's your thing right now. And right now you're going through something that no matter if somebody says, Christina, just focus on the good in your life, that doesn't take away the pain and the wound and the struggle that you've gone through for so much of your life that is finally coming to fruition. You are finally reaching a point that you're ready to actually dig in, dig deep, and get to the bottom and the root of so much of your suffering. And I think, and I would love for you just to share, give the Cliff Notes version to everybody today, what happened in this last little bit that's really just almost been the straw that broke the camel's back and has just brought you to this full circle moment that you realize you have to get some healing around this.
Okay, so most of the people in SWAT that I do with your, you know, on your forums, and then I'm also doing your telecourse, they're aware that my biological father abandoned our family when I was 7 months old. This December, I'm going to be 40.
Yeah.
And he did a whole bunch of things that really shaped who I was and my sense of safety and how my relationship with men in general. His absence in my life shaped me, I think, more powerfully than his presence would have.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is I grew up with this abandonment issue, and it really, and you know what? It's kind of like Wayne Dyer said when he was talking about his father abandoning him. He said, if he never abandoned me, I would have never learned self-sufficiency. And that was my gift to the world, to teach people self-sufficiency. And I really think that this feeling of abandonment, out of that wound came this strength, basically, to be self-sufficient, to be that little perfect overfixer, the good kid. But I'm also the kid who doesn't bother you. I'm the one who, instead of bothering mom who's stressed out and emotionally unavailable, I'm the one that goes and collects, you know, all this money and aluminum cans to get a deposit to get money for something that I wanted, and I don't want to ask you for money, and I took care of it already. All you got to do is say yes. You know, I was that kid.
Yep.
Out of that came that.
Yep.
And that's
enlightened that you're choosing to. And I think we do that too much, though.
Still,
the truth is that fucking sucked, that your dad left you at 7 months and that you were abandoned.
Exactly.
It sucked.
And to this, and let me just say that, okay, after a few days, okay, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but in a nutshell, after 40 years, my biological aunt, his older sister, contacted me on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing about the whole thing, not funny, but funny, was he did not want any contact with us.
He
was just curious.
He didn't?
No.
He didn't
he
or
did
she
not.
Didn't?
He, my biological father,
okay,
did not want to have anything to do with us still. She, mm-hmm, out of curiosity, just messaged me, oh, I missed you all these years, and we loved you so much, and we were denied, and... You know, this whole victim mentality no accountability. It was just glaringly
obvious. Tell me how it made you feel. Like, this is what I'm getting at when someone says, well, no one can be triggered unless this is your problem. And it's like you want to go, whoa. I'm going along in my life, and 40 years later, this lady pops up,
like,
and I'm not supposed to feel something?
Exactly. I felt like she dumped a pile of crap in my lap.
That's
and
exactly
then when
what she
I
did.
I got mad at her, and I did. I stood back. She says, "Well, I feel like you're angry." Taking it. I said, "Yeah,
angry.
I am." I said, "I'm sorry. I'm not angry at you."
Okay, let's just stop for a minute. So, after 40 years, out of curiosity, and you'll have to tell me if that's actually a word she used. She was just curious.
Well,
what was the tone of her
just,
message to you?
Like, it was pretty much like, oh, hi, just passing through on Facebook, and I believe it or not, I think I'm your aunt, you know, that sort of thing. And then, oh, I can't speak for your father. He's very private. He's actually a very bitter man. You should basically feel sorry for him because his breakup with your mother, like, ruined his life, and he's never had good relationships, and blah, 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 excuses, BS, whatever.
So she had just a thoughtless... She was thoughtless, careless, reckless, and disregarded you completely.
Yeah.
Okay?
Exactly.
And that's really important that you hear that. What she did was thoughtless, careless, reckless. It's called reckless disregard. And that is actually aggressive, abusive behavior. When someone is thoughtless, careless, and reckless, that's abusive behavior.
That I
would have
lived with.
Yeah, that's abuse.
Yeah, I was like, this is exactly, I told my mom, I said, Mom, I've always been so grateful for her for being such a mama bear and getting me the hell away from that shit.
Right.
Because to be honest with you, I haven't been without my own, you know, sexual abuse in and of itself. But their family, there was incest. There was all kinds of abuse going on.
Yep.
I can't imagine what other wounds I'd be carrying right now.
Yeah.
I was like, I was so grateful that I was in such an empowered place in my own mind that I saw right away.
I love that little laugh. I love the little laugh, by the way.
Yeah.
I was in such an empowered place in my own mind. Okay, but so what did your...
Because to me, this is the wound. This is like the little wound that keeps me from feeling empowered.
This
because
is the big wound.
Because still that little four-year-old.
This is the big
this
wound.
This is that four-year-old in me. Oh,
yeah.
And let me tell you, this is another little cliff note. The only memory I have of him as a child, he called my mother when I was 4 years old to bail him out of jail. And I remember it was such a shifting moment inside of me because
and you became
I
a
felt
cop.
Like...
And you became a
I
police
was like,
officer. Do you hear that?
Yeah.
You bailed your father out of jail when you were 4 years old.
Well, I didn't.
But
my mom didn't.
Your
he
mom
did,
did.
Didn't.
And you were...
No, she didn't. She told him to F off, basically.
Oh, she didn't. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But he called, and I remember him being on the phone with me, and I heard the sound of his voice, and I was, like, elated. Like, I am like the other kids. I do have a dad.
Yeah.
And I was just, like, I felt for once, normal. I felt like this reality is for me too.
Yeah.
And then he says, okay, well, I got to go, and I'll call you back. But he never did.
Yeah.
And I
because Mom didn't bail
that.
Him out of jail, so he had no need for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I lived with that whole waiting for something that doesn't come.
Yeah.
And wishing for it. And for years, like when I was a little girl, I went numb. I didn't think about him. I was like, well, how can you miss something you never had?
Yeah.
Like, really? I don't understand that, you know. And I was really, like, just tuned out and didn't get into it. You know, I couldn't face it. And I think I had to go through layers. I was pissed off at my mom about a whole bunch of shit.
Yep.
I was pissed off at my brother about a whole bunch of shit.
You were just pissed off. You were so broken and wounded on so many levels. And that's the big wound. You've been waiting for someone or something that's never come for you.
Never really allowed to desire a true intimate relationship.
Yep.
Because waiting, it was like, I have to find somebody who's going to mirror back to me, oh, you're never going to get what you need from me.
Yeah.
And I went through a lot of shit in that sense.
Yeah.
And I really healed that wound a lot over the last year or two.
You're healing. Healing that wound.
Right. It's a process.
Yep.
It's a process.
Yep. Absolutely.
So I healed. I was going through that process, and I was thinking to myself, you know what? Thank God I had addressed a lot of this shit, because if I hadn't, and then this woman had entered into my life, or she doesn't get to enter into my life if I don't let her. I've come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
And ironically, it was just passing through. Haven't heard crap from her in about a week. However, now her son, my cousin. Now, this is funny how I'd like your opinion on this. This is how I come full circle. He's like, I've been looking for you. This is her son, my cousin. I think he's about a year older than me.
Yeah.
Yes. He's like, I've been looking for you and your brother, and I finally found you. I'm so glad my mother found you, and da-da-da-da. And he says, I don't want to talk family politics. I just want to get to know you. And
how do you feel about that?
I said, you know what? I started thinking, like, this wasn't just me who was wounded by this whole situation. Maybe there is this wound in their family. They have a good story. They have this story. But from what I understand, for them, they had me and my brother, and then another uncle of mine, he had a child that kind of was, they said, lost to them. And she's also roughly around my age, and they found her, and her and my uncle had a reconciliation as well. So maybe that's what triggered all this. I don't know.
What
actually did trigger it? Is my father was diagnosed with lung cancer in August, and he's having surgery tomorrow to have part of his lung removed. But he doesn't want to have anything to do with me. No, I can't really give you his number. That's him. He's private.
So what was did you feel like, did you say to your aunt, what is the point of you contacting me?
Yeah, I kind of alluded to that. Like, if he doesn't want anything to do with me, I don't know why we're talking. Questions are towards him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I guess I could find out what's the family medical history.
Christina, where are you at, and where can I give you some coaching about this right now? What's going on? Where are you at emotionally with all of this?
What I was getting at is, like, okay, after that, I just kind of like, la la la, overwhelmed. I'm going to have my own little meltdown later. I know this is how I am, because I'm like, I've always lived in crisis mode. How ironic, I'm a deputy. You know, I can keep a brave face in the midst of great adversity, but then I don't know how to deal with it afterward. I'm just like, let me just shut down. I slept for like, I don't know how long. I had the worst day. I was arguing with everybody. I was bitchy. I was whatever. And I was like, stop. You know what? You need to do some self-care. You need to say, hey, some people violated my space, and I have a right to be quiet, get the hell away from people, whatever. But then when my cousin a week later messages me, I was thinking, how like me, how very like me to be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I guess my needs didn't matter. I guess this hurt you and your family. And, wow, I'm sad. Like,
so what is this what opportunity is this presenting you for how you can make sure that you take care of you through this? and you really take care of you now as a woman through this. You're turning 40. Are you a Sagittarius?
Yep.
Yep, that's like me. So you got a big birthday coming up. You're turning 40. I'm turning 46. But you're turning 40, and this is a big birthday for you to decide that the last 40 years were one way, and moving forward for the next 40, what's it going to look like for you? How are you going to do things differently? What are you going to do? And not necessarily just about this, but in how you're going to show up for yourself.
I feel like now I can show up as me and not my wounds, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I am in the present moment. I'm not the way I'm connecting my point of attraction, I guess, if you want to call it. The way I'm connecting to people is in a different place.
Yeah.
So I'm not, but at the same time, I do feel like I still have this little four-year-old girl who needs to be able to say, yes, I do wish my dad loves me.
Yep.
I wish. Yep. And I can't even say, I want my dad to love me. Because if I say that, I feel like it's like it brings back all this hurt. And if I don't feel a desire, then it doesn't hurt if I don't get it. You know. So
one of the things in empowerment coaching that we often skip over, to be honest with you, and that's, I'm going to say that's my own fault, my own mistake, was when you get to module 2, and I'm not sure if you're there yet, but the very first book is a book called Power versus Force that I talk a lot about, and then there's a map of consciousness. And so there's these different levels that we're really, in a sense, trying to move our clients up a higher level of consciousness, because when we're in a different emotional state, we look at the same problem through different lenses. So when we're really feeling ashamed, we talk to ourselves so badly, like we really think nobody wants us, we think we're losers, we think we're the outcast, we think we're not lovable, and then we start shifting people to a higher level. And one of the levels that we skip over, I think, too much, I've skipped over too much, is almost midway up that level, just above anger, is a place called neutrality. And I don't know if I was just uncomfortable with the word. I was like, neutrality, okay, let's move up to courage. I don't know why I didn't give it a lot when I was really creating the whole program. But just between anger and courage really is this place where I want you to imagine, let's call it this word, that we can start to neutralize the pain. And it's so important that I feel like as I'm now doing this new emotional edge course, like just getting people to just really first neutralize it. But, you know, the only way to neutralize it is first to say, you know how you're doing the I wish? So I wish would be, okay, let's literally go in order. So there'd be shame, and then there'd be guilt, and there'd be blame, and then there'd be sorrow and sadness you'd feel, and then fear, and then you'd move into desire, which is the I wish. So I'm hearing you say, I wish. I'm hearing you say that. Just above desire is anger, where you actually start getting pissed off that you didn't get what you wished for. And then there is self-righteousness or pride, where you start thinking, fuck you, I don't even need your love. I wouldn't even want your love. And then just above it is neutrality. Neutrality, I'm finally really understanding the power of neutrality. Neutrality is literally like, let's say your pH level in your body is acidic and we just want to get it neutral, not even alkaline. Just neutral, because when something is neutralized, it doesn't have that same emotional charge for us. It just doesn't have that same power to, like, hurt us. And so then you can shift up into courage. What would courage have you do? What are you willing to do? What would you, can you accept? All that good stuff. But there's sort of this little bridge right between all the lower places, all the pride and the anger and the desire and jealousy and insecurity and fear and sorrow and sadness and depression. That's why you laid down and slept, because anger, when we can't express our anger, it implodes on us, and that's what depression is. When we can't express, I'm so fucking angry, and to have some place to do it that's healthy and it's validated and witnessed so that we don't have to kick the dog, yell at our kids, scream at people because it's so misdirected. But when we can actually validate, like, I hate what I hate. Like, me writing that blog today is neutralizing my pain, talking about it. And you talking about this is part of the process of neutralizing. It's just starting to be able to, you're just climbing above the pride now, and you're saying, yeah, that was thoughtless, careless, reckless, and I'm validating you. But one of the steps we're going to do this week in week 6 of the telecourse, and you'll get ready for it because it's going to be tomorrow, is is a process that's going to help you neutralize more of this so that you, I think it's just going to help take away some of the sting. And I think you're starting to do that. Are you starting to feel a little bit less sting? Like, you talked about your relationship in one of our past courses or calls, and you talked about the other woman, blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of shame and anger in there. Isn't that almost dissipated for you now? Isn't it dissipating?
Yeah, it was like a catalyst. It just, like, I realized
freedom.
After dealing with my shame, it was like that was the crap holding me back.
Right.
It was like,
okay,
now I'm going to just
go
on
a roll
here. All my energy
is
flowing. And,
I love it.
Yeah,
we're on a roll. We're on a roll
yeah.
up into your highest self.
Hmm.
So part of that now, you're rolling up through. You're literally reaching higher into your highest self to become the best version of you. And I don't mean best as in competition best. I mean best as in the happiest version of you, the most at peace version of you. The, you know, people can't pull you into their chaos anymore. That you have the ability to set a boundary, boom, and you'll be able to say that. That this, I don't know if you realize that you reaching out to me after 40 years in this haphazard way is actually, I know it may be insignificant to you, but for me, it's been very thoughtless and careless, and it's really disregarded my pain and suffering for the last 40 years. On the other hand, Christina, you talked about sort of all this self-sufficiency and strength that you got because of the last 40 years. And on the other hand, we can say that. Like, you know, you can say, on the other hand, what I've learned is that I need to speak my truth and stand up for myself. So I'm letting you know that if you want to move forward and have some type of relationship with me, or your son does, or what, you start to set the boundaries for how people are going to show up in your life, how they're going to talk to you, if you're going to let them in. You don't even have to get mad about it. This is a boundary you can be in or you don't have to be in. And if you don't want to be in, it's totally okay, but this is my boundary. But one of the ways to just reach a little higher into just getting to that neutral place before you can really start to think, like, what do I want? What do I want to do? And that's neutralizing it. And I tell you, one of the best exercises that I think a lot of people are afraid to do is instead of doing the I wish exercise, it's the I hate exercise. I hate that my father walked out on me when I was 7 months old. I hate that he called my house when I was 4 years old and told me he was going to call back and he never did. I hate what that did to me. I hate that he abandoned me. I hate how much his absence hurt me. I hate, and you can actually list every single thing.
I hate his whole family.
To
this day, he still can't be accountable for himself.
I hate that to this day he can't be accountable. Tell me more of the things you hate. Just say it. I hate that
he created so much dysfunction in my life. I hate that because he couldn't get his own shit together and take care of me as a parent. I don't understand what that feels like to have somebody take care of you.
What else you hate? I hate everything. Everything you can think of. Everything that just comes. Just let it flow. I hate
that he's this immature, abusive asshole who said my brother was defective because he needed eyeglasses.
I hate that
he's the kind of guy that robbed a woman's purse and that's why he got sent to jail. I hate that he's got this story that he's this little victim instead of a grown-ass man who couldn't take care of his kids. I hate that he's twisted my mother's ability to stand up for herself as him being denied his rights. I hate that when the judge tried to find his ass to give up his rights, he could not be found, and his own mother had to write a letter to the judge and say, he's my son, I love him, but he's not worth it, they're better off without him. And then after all of that, to this day, it's still, we owe him. We should be the ones to have made amends. I hate that this man thinks that I owe him shit.
Yeah,
I hate that this man who... Even after all this time, even if somebody were to be like, hey, Dad, I miss you. I know you're about to have your lung removed. Can we make amends? He'd still be a jerk and wouldn't be able to accept it. I hate that
what did
he's
it do to
surrounded
you? Tell me what,
so much
tell me what it
function.
Did to you. Tell me all the stuff that you hate now that it affected you. Tell me the ways that it affected you and tell me it was, I hate that it did this to me. I hate that it did this to me. Tell me the things that it did.
I hate that it created a wound that allowed me to behave in a way that other people could be disrespectful to me.
When you feel like you're
needy and you're wishing from love in all the wrong places, that's when people start looking down on you.
I hate that.
You become the other woman. I hate that I was
the other woman.
To be in
I hate that you were the other woman.
Wound.
And I hate that you had to carry that shame, that because of this deep wound, you actually put yourself in a situation that shamed you. I hate that for you.
Yes, I hate that I even went through any of those experiences.
I hate it.
Because someone else abandoned me.
I hate it.
I hate that I was already wounded and then allowed myself to wound myself in that way.
Yep.
What else do you hate? I hate that it took me 40 flipping years to deal with this shit.
And you know what? You know the moment when you have the laugh is the moment that you know you're neutralizing this. And you can keep doing this. And in fact, I want you to go into the message form in our Emotional Edge telecourse, and I want you to go in there, and I want you to say, I just did a coaching call with Crystal, and I have to list every single thing I hate. And I want you to list everything. In fact, I don't care if it takes you an hour to write everything you hate. And it doesn't just have to be about your dad. It can be every single thing that has ever happened or that you did that you hate. I want you to get all that stuff emptied out so it's just neutralized, because you're beyond shame. You're beyond guilt. You're not afraid, little girl. You're not even in desire anymore that you're wishing. You're moving through your anger now. You're moving beyond your pride. I feel it, Christina. I can feel how open you're becoming. And neutrality allows you to now become open to miracles, open to love, open to new ways, open to healing yourself. You're opening up. You're so opening.
Faith.
It creates space.
Yeah, you can get rid of that. It creates that space for good to show up in your life.
Yeah.
I hate that I had all the shit in the way that got in the way of my good.
Yeah. I fucking hate
that's
that.
What I hate.
I hate it, yes. Too. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it for you. I hate it for your kids. I hate it for any way that it's just changed you, hurt you, made you not be confident, not self-loving. I hate all the damage that that did to you. I just completely and utterly hate it.
Mm.
How does it feel when you hear someone say they fucking hate what you went through?
It's like, for me, the other piece is like, I don't know what that feels like, because most of the time, most of my life, my mother made everything about her. And so
we're not now. I hate that your mother made everything about her.
Yeah. And
so
this is like the first time I kind of was able to process this without like kind of trying to guard myself and try to censor or monitor or think, well, I don't want to say anything that's going to piss mom off and, be considerate of her feelings and, So
I hate that you have to consider so many other people's feelings in spite of your own. I hate that.
And still be accused of being selfish.
I hate that you've been accused of being selfish. I hate that you've been accused of being self-absorbed. I hate that for you. I hate that you carry that with you. I hate that you even have people talking to you like that. I hate how abusive people have been to you. I hate it. It doesn't serve you. It's not served you. I hate what it did to you. And I know that you're going to take it, and just like you've done everything in your life, you're going to run with it, and you're going to become so strong and so empowered and such a voice for other women. But I still fucking hate what you went through. I hate it.
I hate that it's hard for me to receive that support.
I hate that, too.
Like,
I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it. I hate it that you're still trusting. I hate it that you don't know if you can even really trust me still. I hate that you don't know, because you've been so abandoned and so betrayed and so let down that you can't even trust someone who has no agenda and nothing for your life. I hate that. I hate what all this abuse has done to you. I hate how it's hardened a little part of your heart. I hate that.
I hate how others judge you for having a wound.
I hate that, too. I hate that we feel like we're crazy and neurotic if we need to talk about it and heal it. I hate that.
Or you're too needy or,
I hate when people call me too needy. I've had a narcissist in my life that I loved so much, and when I needed them, it was actually a woman. It was a friend, and it was so shocking to me because I had done so much, and she would be like, I don't know why you're so needy now. And I actually think, I can't believe I'm being called needy. I hate that we have narcissists in our lives. I hate that for you. I hate that your mother was a narcissist and your father was just completely a narcissist that abandoned you. I hate that. I hate it. I hate it. And you know what's going to happen one day, Christina? You're going to take that hate list, and it's not now, but there's going to come a day where you're going to write that list and say, thank you for. Thank you for being abandoned. Thank you for all these. And I know there'll be, right now you might go, what? We're still in the hate. But there is going to come a day where you can actually look at it and go, who I became in spite of.
You know, honestly, I saw a glimpse of that. Like, it was almost like when this moment came about, it was that gift. That was the gift to me.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, thank you, Jesus. I was not raised by these people.
Thank you, Jesus. I got away. Thank you, Jesus.
Yes.
I got away from these people who not only abandoned me and my brother, there's another cousin that was abandoned. There's a whole family. There's all these lost children. And thank God you got out of it. Thank God.
Thank God.
What if you had your father in your life, that shitty person in your life every day, just degrading you, emotionally not there for you, making you feel, where would you be? And I don't want you to go there yet. Don't even do that yet, because you're not ready to actually do the thank you yet. I want you to do a whole big, long I hate list, and I want you to do it in the message form.
Okay.
What do you feel? What's coming up for you right now? How are you feeling right now? If you could just share just how you feeling under the
how
surface.
How I feel?
Yeah.
I feel like, okay, on the top, I'm going numb because underneath is a lot.
Yeah.
And, like, I need to be able to acknowledge it, but I'm still learning how to do that. How to
so all I want you to do
sort of
is
stuff
do,
it away.
All I want you to do is do I hate. I hate. Each sentence, just say I hate. Don't justify it. Don't explain it. Don't. Just why you hate it, and you have the right to. I was raised in a family that we weren't allowed to use the word hate, like, about anything. Like, you couldn't say you hated anything because it was not positive, and you had to be positive, and positive psychology, and positive affirmations, and everything had to be positive. But the whole truth is, when you have all this pain and suffering and anger and injustice inside of you, it's going to implode on you. And if you can acknowledge it and be validated and witnessed, that is the only way to heal it. It's the only way. There is no other way that I know of. And dealing with trauma and post-traumatic stress and complex PTSD, which is like a lifetime of stress, what we're actually learning now. Scientists are like literally saying, what is the psychology for this? What is the prescription for this? And you know what it is? Being able to talk about it, being witnessed, being able to go into your body. We're going to do that tomorrow night and really start to feel those aches and pains. Learning how to really get out all the yucky stored pain. You know, after Ashanti did the last week on the Emotional Edge, when we did that coaching, she woke up in the middle of the night and the next day with just stabbing back pain. And I said to her, that's it in your body. So let it out. And you got to write everything you hate. And when you're doing it, you can feel the pain in your body and go into it. Because we've been taught to run from it, numb pain. Keep running from it. Keep numbing it. And I'm saying, even that numb feeling you right now, say, I hate that I'm numb. I hate that my head is spinning. I hate that my emotions are bubbling up to the surface and is actually making me want to go lay down. I hate that I can't feel my own feelings. I hate that I've not ever had a platform or an opportunity or anyone in my life that validated my pain and suffering. That's going to start to give you back your power. And that's what this process is, Christina. It's you taking back your power.
It makes me wonder, why are there so many forces wanting to disempower us? What are they so afraid of?
Say that again to me. Say that again to me.
I wonder why they, these powers that be, are so afraid.
Because
of us being empowered.
Because I want you to imagine dark and light. And if you say the powers that be, let's just go there for a minute and imagine that we're talking about good and bad. Is that what you're talking about? Good and bad in the world?
Yeah, or sure.
God and the devil. Truth and lies.
Whoever they are.
Whoever they are. What is they? Well, who is they when you say that? Do you know when you say that? Who are they, the powers that be? Who do you think that is? The government?
Whoever's like the social dominion at this time. Men. Like the men, like, the Trumps of the world.
Because they don't want the truth to get out. Because they don't want the truth to get out. And if we can keep people so afraid of never telling the truth of what happened to them, injustice can keep happening. when people all of a sudden start telling the truth, everybody becomes accountable. Like, I've joked with my kids and I go, okay, is there anything we got to work out? Like, you're not going to turn 30 and write a book about me, right? Like, let's work it out now. Because in a joking way, the truth is people need to be validated, heard, held, witnessed, and so they can heal it. We really can't heal something that somebody keeps saying to us, okay, I know, it sucked, get over it. No, I can't get over it until something in my own spirit recognizes how fucking horrible it was. And it's wrong, and it's an injustice, and the world has a million, billion injustices. But the only way that darkness prevails, that evil prevails, is for people to stay silent. It's for you to not take back your power. Just imagine you're a big, bright light in this world, and people have done things, and you've been ashamed, and so you dim your light, so you don't stand out too much, so you don't tell the truth, so nobody ostracizes you, you don't get kicked out of your tribe, but you've been kicked out of your tribe. You don't really have a family that's there to support you. You don't really have... So now what's happening is you're saying, okay, I tried it that way. I tried to play it small. I tried to live under the radar. I tried not to talk about my wounds. I tried to be tough in spite of it. But you know what? I'm not as empowered or powerful or light or bright as I know I could be. So I'm taking back my power. And the way we take back our power is each one of us healing our own wounds, that we become very big, bright lights in the world. And we shine light on our darkness and oppression. And all of a sudden, we start going through the world. People start saying, yeah, I guess that isn't okay to push somebody up against the wall and stick your hand up her skirt. Wow, is that actually sexual? Could I actually go to jail for that? Oh, my God. Or maybe it really isn't okay to just contact somebody after 40 years on Facebook and say, hey, just passing through. I know you were abandoned when you were 8 months old, but I carelessly, recklessly am disregarding your sense of well-being right now. Who knows where you're at in your life? I'm just going to come in there and just fuck with your mind. Maybe people would become, they would wake up and pull their heads out of their asses and start thinking about how they're communicating, how they're compromising, how they're treating other people, because they know that it could be recorded. And I think that's brilliant. And I think that your starting point is you just really owning and talking about what you hate and what was done to you, and to be in a safe place that you're just going to have somebody say, I hate that too. And that's all you got to do with it right now. And like all of these different interventions and processes that I offer, just let this one percolate and take its effect on you. Because, wow, I can't tell you what it's going to do. I just know what it's going to begin doing.
Mm.
Will you do that?
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Everything. Absolutely. And I mean, you can talk about anything that's ever happened or you've done or have been done, anything, and just use it with an I hate. Will you do that?
Yes.
And you don't have to do it right now. You can do it when you're ready. You can do it when you feel emotionally ready to do it. And I want to thank you.
Yes, because all I want to do right now is go lay down. That's what I'm thinking. Like, oh, just go lay down. Just be quiet.
Yeah, just go lay down. Don't do this. And you know what? Just remember that is anger imploding. When your body says, I can't do this right now, I just got to go lay down and sleep. That's just your body saying, I've got all this anger inside of me, and I don't know if I can let it out. So I'm going to hold it in longer, and it's going to drain every bit of my energy, my light, my power.
Mm.
So I want you to try it and see what it does for you, because you are slowly but surely taking back your power, and you're becoming a very bright, shining light in the world, and boy, oh boy, Texas needs you. And you're going to be this fierce woman. And if you continue to be a police officer, you're going to be a big, bright light of just fierce power down there in Texas. And I can't wait for it to happen.
Mm.
Bam! That's all I got to say about that. All right? Mm. Christina, I don't even know if you want to stay on the line for this. You might not even know this song. You may not even get this song. But I'm going to end with this song because I found it only yesterday. I literally made a playlist that I've just put it on over and over and over and over and over, because there's something about this song that just reminds me of you, me, and all those lost children. And just what's going on in the world right now. So I'm going to end with this, and it's called Lost Boy by Ruth B., and I absolutely love this song, and I thank you. For those of you on the line today, thank you for joining us, Christine. Thank you for your courage, and I'm going to turn it over to Ruth.
Thank you, Crystal.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. My eyes.
The moderator has left the conference.